This is Primal Screen, a weekly radio show airing Monday evenings on Triple R. Primal Screen is about movies, from the ones on the big screen to the ones you stream. Hope you enjoy the podcast version and feel free to get in touch via the Primal Screen Facebook page or the Triple R website.
You're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R with Flick Ford. Wolfram has been described as a spiritual follow-up to Warwick Thornton's highly acclaimed 2017 neo-western Sweet Country. And like its predecessor, it once again draws upon some of the real-life family story of David Tranter, who co-wrote the film with Stephen McGregor. When two swaggering outlaws roll into town to strike it rich in the mines, they unleash a wave of cruelty that shatters the community's fragile balance and leads three irrepressible kids to break free from their white masters as they set off across the Sweet Country of Central Australia in search of a safe home. Set in 1932, the film centres on a mother, Pansy, played by Deborah Mailman, longing for the return of her stolen children. It is a tremendous honour to now be joined in the studio by Deborah Mailman. Deborah, welcome to Primal Screen.
Hi, Flick. Thanks so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
I'm very excited to have you here. I'm going to wear my unabashed fandom proudly on my sleeve and say that I have been following your career from the very beginning. I grew up watching you on screen from Rachel Perkins' Radiance, 1998, several seasons of The Secret Life of Us, The Rabbit Proof Fence, Sapphires, Redfern Now, Jack Irish, Clever Man, Total Control, and even kids shows like Play School, Little Jay and Big Cuz and Bluey. Now I'm a parent. So thank you for everything you have given us.
You're so welcome. I've been very fortunate to have all the opportunities that you've just mentioned, and I know, I'm still here doing it, and I get to work with people like Warwick Thornton, and just makes me always to continue to be in love with the work that I do and being part of Australian film and television.
Mm. Well, let's get straight into Wolfram. The title actually refers to an old name for tungsten,
yes,
which is found in abundance below the ground in Central Australia. And in the film, we see Aboriginal kids being forced to crawl down into these shafts to mine the wolfram. Now, Deborah, you actually grew up in an outback mining town, Mount Isa,
yep,
in Queensland.
Born and bred, born and raised.
And I was reading your dad was a stockman.
Yeah.
What was it like growing up in Mount Isa?
Oh, well, it's home. There was no other comparison, so it was everything to me. And I grew up... at the old rodeo grounds in Mount Isa. And we grew up with horses. My dad was a champion bull rider and rodeo rider and, you know, grew up in the saddle basically, as did, you know, my uncles and stuff. So the dust, the flies, the smell of manure, horse manure, it just brings me home. And so anytime I get the opportunity to go back home, you know, out bush, even Alice Springs, Mbantwa, you know, that just brings me home. So I'm always very lucky when I get that chance to travel. But, yeah, no, it's my home and I miss it because I haven't been home for a very long time now. I moved down to the south coast of New South Wales and I've been there for a long time now. So I do miss a lot of a lot of my home.
I think there's so much to unpack with your career. I was reflecting on all the different roles that you've done. And as a starting point, you were the first Indigenous woman to receive the Best Actress Award from the Australian Film Institute, which is a groundbreaking achievement. And I think made all the more remarkable by the fact that it was your debut screen performance in Rachel Perkins' Radiance from 1998. I recently rewatched your acceptance speech. I don't know if you recall that.
I know exactly what it looked like and where I was. Yes.
Can you take us back there and describe it for the audience?
So I was on stage at the time with Bell Shakespeare STC and we were doing King Lear and I was in the role of Cordelia. And the play was directed by Barry Kosky, the amazing Barry Kosky. And so I knew, you know, that it was the awards night. Obviously had the nomination but didn't think too much of it because the focus was getting through this play and through that night performance. And then I remember, you know, we did a quick curtain call and Barry Kosky grabs me by the arm and shoves me out to the forecourt of the Opera House. Now, there's a big electrical storm coming in from the horizon and there were all these cables anywhere and it didn't click. I was like, what's going on? Because it takes a while to wind down from any performance. And so I was sort of a little bit of in a deer in headlight. There was so much going on. All I was thinking of was like, I'm going to be bloody electrocuted right now because there was serious storm around us. And I was starting to get a little bit sort of terrified of like something's going to go down. And then suddenly it's a live cross from the Australian Film Institute Awards. And I'm suddenly on screen and I'm in whiteface. And my character called Delia is pregnant. So I'm in this black cape with white pancake face. Barry Kosky is next to me wearing his sort of costume suit with a little fez on his head. I just wonder what the hell people were looking at, because I've looked back on that footage and I'm going, oh my goodness, like, I don't know how to explain this.
And there's no context given at all.
There's absolutely zero context. But it was mad. It was such one of those insane moments that I'll never forget.
If you haven't seen it, you can find it.
I think apparently you can find it
somewhere.
Yeah,
it's on the National Film Archive.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, go back and check it out. Now, since that iconic moment, you have had an amazing career across TV, film and theatre, and I've heard you speak a lot about the importance of First Nations crew both behind and in front of the camera, and Redfern now comes to mind.
Yes. I think the work that I really love being part of and I gravitate towards too is First Nations storytelling, is telling our mob story. And when I first started out in the industry, we're talking, you know, I went from high school from Mount Isa, went to Brisbane and I trained at QUT Academy of the Arts, Kelvin Grove campus. That was like beginning of 89 into 90. I didn't really know what I was doing. All I decided was, in high school, I wanted to be an actor. I had no idea what that was going to look like, how I was going to do it, but I just knew that that's where I wanted to be, and I sort of joined the dots to get me to where I needed to get to. And so back then, there wasn't a lot of anyone doing anything, you know, particularly behind the camera or, you know, stagecraft work. Like, there was a number of us actors doing it, but, you know, it's taken a long time to where we get to now, where, you know, we have, and there's still a lot of shortages around crew positions in our film and stage industry. We still need some more mob behind the camera. But what it means is there's a trust there. We can all identify that. Or what we're trying to do and what we're wanting to say with these stories. It's always fun when I'm working with mob. We just get it. There's a lot of laughter, but also there's a responsibility that we take on with whole heart in terms of telling our stories, because we are the beneficiaries of the people who fought the good fight.
Mm.
And, you know, to our ancestors who, you know, it is our responsibility to continue that, and we're just doing it in a different way in terms of format and filmmaking. But, you know, it's a great privilege and honour that I'm in the position that I am, and that I get to work with a lot of First Nations writers now and directors and producers, and it's just building on that legacy that was given to us.
I promise you, we'll come back for them.
No. Please.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Malman. I'm here in Nam, and you're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R.
You had worked with Warwick before.
Yes. So he was our cinematographer on Radiance. Warwick was my first cinematographer.
Oh, how special.
And then, you know, throughout, over the course of time, he shot The Sapphires, mm-hmm. and then we did The Dark Side, and then obviously, you know, wasn't part of Sweet Country, but now with Wolfram. So we grew up together professionally.
Yeah. I love Warwick's cinematography, particularly in Wolfram. It's really spectacular. And I've been thinking a lot about Pansy. You know, she's at the centre of Wolfram and she's such a compelling figure. And despite the centrality of her role, she actually doesn't have that much dialogue in comparison with some of the other characters.
It's almost wordless.
Yes. Warwick is shooting you often in kind of a medium shot. Her longing and her determination is predominantly being communicated through how she holds her body and the micro gestures on her face when there is a rare close-up. I imagine that you needed to be quite economical in your performance in order to communicate the depth and texture of her story. How did you approach it?
I remember the first day we were on set, and one of the things that Wok said to me was, he said, "This is about survival." And I went, "Okay, got it." So there was I never had a blueprint to this performance. It was just whatever was happening in that moment, and that was the response to it. And generally, I would like to sit down with the script and this is where I'm going to start and have this little emotional map going on. But because that wasn't there, and it's the way that what works too, and because we're used to each other, there's not a lot of explaining or overthinking that needs to be done, you know, because I also know he's going to tell the story, you know, so I just give over to the fact that Wok's got this handled, and I just need to be not overthinking those moments, and that sometimes, you know, it's just looking out and the idea of where are my kids, and that's all it needs to take to sort of tell Pansy's story. But, you know, it talks to the bigger issue around how resilient our women were and continue to be. And, you know, this is Warwick and David Tranter, who's one of our writers. This is their grandmother's story, and they're sort of those generations of women who this is lived experience. And so I just had to feel myself through this. I guess that's the simplest answer. I just knew that Wok, if he needed something specific, he'd come to me. Otherwise, it was just feeling it and just knowing that the undercurrent was her searching for her kids.
How do you move in that space? Is there debriefing? Is there what are you doing?
I don't know. When Wok says something when he speaks about this whole idea of trauma and grief, and that particularly when we're talking about the kids in the film, and that they don't have time to cry. They'll get to cry when they're grandmothers. So it's that whole survival instinct and that resilience in terms of this story, that you don't get to cry. You'll cry when at the end of it all. I don't know, because it's actually a real privilege to be able to tell the story, because we haven't had that opportunity, you know, for so long. And now finally we do, as filmmakers, are able to tell all that story that we've just know it's we grew up with. Orally it's been passed down, or, you know, there's some sort of sense of we all know it in terms of grief, but we've never had the chance for so long to be able to tell that story in the way that we want to tell it. So now that we're here as filmmakers, and we have that permission from family, but also we have that permission as artists to sort of go there, also not just drowning in the grief, but also entertaining, being entertaining as filmmakers. Like, it's that fine balance of like, well, we have this opportunity now and we're not going to waste it. So it's a real privilege to be where we are right now. And yes, there's that sort of harder themes that we're telling. But I mean, I guess particularly with Wolfram, I find it a real sense of story of hope. And Wok says this. He says that Wolfram is almost the antidote to Sweet Country.
Oh, yeah. I love
that. Which I think it's a really beautiful way of saying, because, you know, Sweet Country, if you've seen it, it's brutal. Mm. It's relentless, and there's no redemption in any way, shape or form. And so I love that he's going, well, Wolfram is now the antidote to that. It's the women's story. It's the kid's story. And there is a sense of hope at the end of it. You know, and I know Wok's not this as an artist. He's not going to, every film's going to be a Sweet Country, you know, in terms of its harshness and its brutality. He needs to shift it up as a story maker as well. So I love that there. And I don't think he was too sure whether he was going to go do this as well until the writers say, hey, take a read of this. And then he went, okay, I love where this is going, and there's a softness, you know, if you can say this around Wolfram, there is a softness there that I'm really attracted to as a story.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, the kids bring so much liveliness. They are exceptional.
They are exceptional. We can't give too much away in terms of, but they are just extraordinary young actors. And I love when I get to work with these new, you know, we're talking about these kids, they're quite young. Like, I don't know, I sort of look back at where I started and where my confidence was at that stage. And it was like nowhere near the sort of guts and intelligence that these young performers have these days. And they were just so open to this environment, and whether they fully got what they're telling or not as a full story, but they were just so present and so beautiful and just a real joy to work with, you know. And they had to deal with really hard stuff, and they did it with such grace and ease and willingness.
I wondered about how the film has performed in community. Has there been any screenings yet?
Flick, I don't know, actually. I know they've already done some screenings up in Darwin, and the team Walker just came back from a Perth screening. I don't know if it's been shown yet in community, and that'll be fantastic when that happens. But I imagine that will, but I don't know if that's happened.
We talked a little bit before about this absence of dialogue, but there's obviously a very rich communication going on between the characters, and particularly Philomac.
Yes, yes.
And just these
played
exchange,
by Petre, who's amazing.
So excellent. And so much is just being communicated through the eyes.
Here's the thing that this was a question, this is a very similar question that was asked at our queue in our screening last night at Elsternwick. And someone in the audience asked the question about that sort of the hand, the sign language is the sort of, and there is a sign language within Aboriginal culture. And what sort of went on to explain that when you go on to another country, it's about respect. You can't start talking your language while you're in someone else's country, because that can often wake up the spirits. Uh-huh. So it's a sign of respect. So that idea of sign language means you can still communicate. You know, you okay? Yeah. You know, without saying anything, and that's just about treading very carefully on someone else's country, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. I never knew that. That's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
So you're not sort of waking up anything.
Just in a formal sense, that has this really interesting effect on the film as well. So the silence and this focus on these non-verbal communication creates a lot of space.
Well, when you look at our mob in terms of, how they... There's a real sense of listening and learning. That's how you learn. That's how you learn cultures, by watching and listening, not by talking over the person who's telling you how to do it. That's how you learn. That's how it's always been. Wok, who's obviously strong in that sort of how he's been taught, that's just part of him. That's you leave the space to be able to learn and listen.
You gentlemen looking for adventure?
Why are you with those white fellas?
They took me.
He's gone.
Philomac! You let your black go away, did you? We're looking for a couple of half-breeds. They didn't pass through here, did they?
Una nana put your mind! Una!
I'm the man that come here. They're hunting us.
You're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R with Flick Ford. And tonight I'm in conversation with Deborah Mailman. And one of the things I was really excited to chat with her about was her work on the board of the First Nations Arts, which is a new part of Creative Australia, which is the government's principal arts investment and advisory body. And the focus of the board is to oversee the work of First Nations art and support and promote Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander arts, and also to create sustainable career paths for First Nations people. And I was just really excited to have that opportunity to speak with her and understand a bit more around that. So let's dive back in.
This is a new board that's been created under Labor's new cultural policy revive, and part of that was, you know, the first pillar is First Nations first. And so from that identification, government wanted to bring in a First Nations board of Creative Australia. So you have the Creative Australia Board, and Creative Australia, for anyone who doesn't know, is our peak funding body, our government funding body for all arts across all forms, from dance to drama to opera to music and everything in between. So it's a massive ship that is looking after the arts in this country. And so it was identified that we needed a First Nations board to specifically look at First Nations artists and organisations across this country. So I'm part of that, and it's so exciting.
What do you sort of see as the future of First Nations filmmaking?
Well, you know, like any arts, we need money.
Yeah. Well, thinking about yourself, Warwick, so much of the black wave of cinema, which we see these amazing films being made, late 90s, early 2000s, it's continued on, but that was because of funding. You know,
exactly,
that was
right.
Money being put
That's
there.
100% right, Flick. Like, it was targeted funding.
Yes.
And, you know, when we look at the Indigenous unit of Screen Australia, you know, 25 plus years of targeted funding, targeted sort of strategy around getting to the point now where we are as storytellers. So it's been a long journey, a lot of work, but it is absolutely about investment and funding.
Yeah, and being intentional about it.
Yes. So that's what it takes. You know, there's only so much money to go around, but, you know, it's always trying to identify where the gaps are, what is needed right now across this sort of landscape. You know, not just in the arts, but also crew-wise. You know, looking at that sort of building up the workforce capacity and sharing it across, you know, making sure that, you know, communities are getting the money as much as metropolitan areas, identifying where the gaps are and trying to make it as even as possible with the very little money that we have.
And it's such a valuable investment because it's not just for the creatives who are working currently or those coming up in the industry, but it's also for the audiences at home who are watching their stories, seeing themselves on screen. That's so powerful, and really can't put a price on that.
Well, and it's so powerful because now you're looking at how the new wave of, well, I'm only talking from an actor's point of view, like all the sort of new wave of actors, young actors that are coming through now, it is because of all the hard work and sort of seeing what's possible. And it's so fantastic that, you know, now there's so many black actors that you can just go and you know, this is where we needed to be, and it's only going to get stronger, you know. So it's so exciting because I think a lot of us want to just retire now.
No, like, you're not allowed, Deb.
I just want to go and put my feet up and pass the baton, and they can do the rest of the work now. So there's a part of that because we've been in this industry, you know, me, Wok, Perky, all of us, you know, we've been doing it for a while now. And so there will be that time where it's like, okay, maybe need to take a step back now. Who knows whether that'll happen, because it's so, I just love this job. I love the ability to be a storyteller, but it does, that sort of famine and feast sort of industry, you know, it takes its toll.
Yeah. I just have to ask this as a Secret Life of Us fangirl, but your character felt so groundbreaking at the time. You had so much complexity. You had flaws.
Yeah.
You were fantastic to watch on screen.
Thank you.
What was it like for your side of it and going out and occupying that space?
Well, I think the show, Secret Life of Us in general, you know, was revolutionary in terms of its way of telling the story. And, you know, I guess for so long there, the dramas that were on screen were of either, you know, cop shows or medical, and there's nothing wrong with that. But finally you get to see the show about 20-something kids all living, all flawed, trying to just get through the day, you know, and that was so fresh at the time to have something like that and really explore the idea of what it means to be a young person. Mm. What are those sort of those challenges, and also, you know, falling deeply in love, falling deeply into all that, like just that sort of movement of life that this show really captured at that time. And for me, like, look, first of all, it was a job, and it was so exciting to finally not be a broke actor.
Yeah.
And actually to have some security around the fact that, oh, I, what? I, So I remember the audition going in and having no idea what was going to come of it, and then suddenly, oh, what? I've got a job. And at the time I was living in Sydney, so I'm like, so I've got to move to Melbourne. Okay. So it was just little going, oh, I've got to do this and do this. And on a logistical point of view, I just had to get my shit together.
Yeah.
And just go, right, I'm moving to Melbourne. And then, okay, so, and back then we're talking 22 eps in a season, which is unheard of now. Mm. So I really sort of, Secret Life was my camera training.
Yeah.
You know, in the way that, you know, where you see shows like Home and Away and Neighbours, that's our training ground for camera. And up until then, I'd only really been in theatre. I'd done maybe one or two, you know, had done Radiance, but my training was in theatre. So to suddenly do this leapfrog over into television and all very technical, and it was just brilliant. It's like, okay, I had security of finance, then I'm suddenly learning a new part of my craft, and I get to do that with the likes of Claudia Carvin, Sammy Johnson, Joel Edgerton, Abby Tucker, you know, Spencer McLaren, Damien de Montemus, Sibylla Budd. It was just the most, I'm so fond of that experience. It just gave me everything that I could wish for as an actor.
There was a real absence of that sort of content with Australian characters.
Yes.
Like we didn't have that specificity. So it was so thrilling from the audience to watch it.
And then to be a woman of colour.
Yes.
To be in a role that really, who was a hopeless romantic. And I remember, what was the thing? It was all about the trifecta, right? Love, life and home. And I loved, because that was probably close to any character I've ever played that actually spoke to me and who what I was dealing with. Like I wasn't, I was just trying to figure out my life at that stage. So it was really fantastic to sort of finally go, okay, I get this. This is who I am, you know. And, I'm very thankful for that experience and for them to be brave enough actually to have a, you know, Aboriginal woman be in this role on a mainstream drama. You know, that was still few and far between at the time.
Sometimes still is today.
Exactly.
Which is...
Go figure.
Yeah, 2026. but talking about something a bit more contemporary, Total Control.
Oh, yes.
What a remarkable role. Like polar opposites, really.
Yeah.
To Secret Life of Us.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, Total Control, well, that was actually my first... Look, it's hard because I don't see it in this lens. I always see every work as an ensemble.
You're in the lead. You can say that, can't you?
Well, it's the first time I've been in the lead. And yeah. I was like, really? Really? Because, okay, well, I don't see it, but yeah. And so suddenly, and it was terrifying because then I just thought, well, if I'm shit at this, then the whole show goes down the toilet.
So No pressure.
But then I was like, okay, step back, just approach like any job you've ever been given and just do the process that works for you.
Yeah.
And just so I had to really calm my nerves down. But also I was working with Blackfellow Films. I was working with Rachel Perkins and Darren Dell, the people who I love the most in the world and who I've worked with for a very, very long time. So I was in good hands. Yeah. And it was just about going, okay, just do the work, Deb.
And also love that you get your starring opposite, Wayne Blair.
Oh, right. Who's another dear old friend? We've known each other since Queensland when we're both training there up in Brisbane. So, you know, and it's great that Blackfellow Films, you know, got the money, got the opportunity to just be brave in the storytelling.
I have to ask about the kids' shows.
Yes.
I feel like your voice is so recognisable, so I loved when I heard you on Bluey.
Sheepdog 1 or Sheepdog 2? I love that character description.
A career highlight.
Sheepdog 2.
And also Little Jay and Big Cars. Yeah. That's a very different show in itself because you're actually... Yeah, what would you have felt like? Can you imagine little Deb as a kid watching that show?
Yes.
What would that have felt like?
It would have been, well, because I can see the effect that it has on our young kids now who are loving Little Jane Big Cars. Gee, it would have been amazing to have that back in the day.
Kids TV, Australian kids TV, is at such a really interesting stage
at
the moment.
It is very interesting because I think, you know, I think there's a really strong recognition that we need our kids to have the context of Australian stories and that they grow up with Australian voice identity and, you know, all the different sort of belief values that we have. Like that's, I think everyone identifies that that's incredibly important. But I think it's also probably the most fragile in regards to television funding and.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but you know, I think it takes. You know, I think the success of Bluey speaks really strongly to how important children's television is in this country, but also how successful it can be and globally successful. So I love that Bluey has taken off in the way that it has.
Yeah.
And it's such a global phenomenon now. So that just gives our children's television programming more sort of, I guess, what's the word? There's an important need for it is all I can say. We need our kids in the context of their own stories and their own family stories, understanding what it means to be in this country and what it means to be their tiny little home, their tiny neighbourhood and their school situation. To have the opportunity to do animation as well and voiceover work, which, you know, I've never really had that much experience with it, you know, a little while back, and then suddenly, you know, being able to move into this space is so fun.
Yeah,
and it's a different part of the skill too, because you can't rely on facials. You can't rely on anything other
than
your voice.
And you're so expressive. You've got such a beautifully expressive face.
Just going back to something like Little Jane Big Cars. So this little animated series on NRTV is translated into a number of languages and communities, which is really brilliant. And that was one of the sort of remits of the show, was like, okay, how do we take it to our kids out, you know, in remote areas, but also in their own languages? So I can't remember the number of languages now that kids can hear, how many languages it's been translated, but that sort of work, it's so important, and I'm really proud to be a part of.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Same as Wolfram, go see Wolfram.
Yes, go see Wolfram. Deb, it has been an absolute honour speaking with you.
Thank you, Flick.
Fulfilling
you
so a lifelong
much.
Dream. Wolfram is currently screening at major and independent cinemas. You're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R.
Thanks for listening to Primal Screen, a weekly radio show airing Monday evenings on Triple R. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast version, and feel free to get in touch via the Primal Screen Facebook page or the Triple R website.